News.
Headlines: the United States unveils a fresh arms package for Ukraine consisting of precision rocket systems and combat drones. The Iraqi Resistance Force commemorates the anniversary of its establishment with a massive parade. Plus, Israeli forces injure dozens of Palestinians during a raid into a neighborhood in East Al-Quds. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. The United States keeps pumping military aid into Ukraine. It has signed off an additional $270 million worth of weapons for the country to help it fight with Russia. The White House says President Joe Biden has made it clear that Washington will continue to support Ukraine and its people for as long as it takes. More than half of the latest aid comes from a $40 billion package Congress approved for Ukraine in May. The aid includes portable drones and four more HIMARS precision rocket systems, among others. That brings to 20 the number of HIMARS systems sent to Ukraine. Officials there have called them a game changer in countering Russia. Moscow has already warned against sending arms to Ukraine, accusing the West of fueling the flames of war. Our correspondent Johnny Miller joined us earlier from the eastern Donbass region. He explains whether the arms the U.S. has sent to Ukraine have really been a game changer, as the Americans and Ukrainians claim.
The United States has said that it's been, in the past, sent many game changers in this conflict. None of them have really changed the game. This HIMAR MLRS artillery system is very useful to the Ukrainians, though, and it has been doing damage to the Russian advance. So these NATO weapons certainly are very useful to the Ukrainians. The only reason Ukraine hasn't been forced to the negotiating table so far is because of these NATO weapons. But still, it's very clear that it is Russia's advantage in this conflict, although it looks likely that it will be more like a long, grinding war than a swift Russian victory. There is, however, the increasing signs in NATO countries that they may be wavering a little bit in their support for Ukraine. Some articles and some prominent Western publications suggesting that NATO countries may be running out of weapons, maybe depleting their own stocks and unable to keep supporting Ukraine. Also, some wavering of the political will.
Since the war in Ukraine started, we have been closely following the developments there and keeping you up to date. Central to that effort has been our correspondent, Johnny Miller, reporting from a war-torn country already has its own challenges and risks. But now Johnny says that he has been placed on a kill list of the ultra-nationalist group in Ukraine. This after he reported on a story about a kill list associated with the Ukrainian government promoting violence against pro-Russian children in the Donbass region. A number of journalists have been killed in Ukraine after being put on that list. We talked to independent German war correspondent Anila Lipp, who has been on the kill list of Ukraine's ultra-nationalists. She says that the list endangers the lives of journalists in Ukraine.
Unfortunately, I'm familiar with this list. They put me on it last year in November. I just came here in October and stayed to cover the situation, the situation in Donbass in German, well, for Germans. And what I was doing practically was only translating interviews I did with people who live here in Donbass into German. And for that, they put me on this kill list, you can say. And I, for myself, I also don't understand why, because I'm certainly not a kind of person you should kill or who should be killed. And yes, John also, they put also John now on this list. There's also a 13 years old girl they put on it, and it definitely is dangerous, because there are several persons who they put on this list and then who have been killed afterwards. Well, actually, nobody knows about this list in the West, because nobody is telling them, the people. There's a huge informational wall, blockade between Ukraine, Russia, and the West. So there are lots of lies and fakes they show to the, for example, the German people, and they just don't know what's going on here. And of course, this topic should be discussed more deeply, and people have to know about this, because it's really unbelievable and very dangerous for lots of journalists.
Record high temperatures are causing France to take increasingly drastic measures amid the West sanctions campaign against Russia. Citizens are being asked to conserve power, with energy cuts this winter already being called a certainty. Ramin Mazahiri has more.
Due to their decision to sanction Russia over the unrest in Ukraine, France and the European Union are desperately trying to build energy stocks ahead of this winter. However, a record heat wave has created a surge in energy consumption, and that's prompted the government to informally call for the rationing of electricity. Citizens have been pushed to make an effort by cutting off Wi-Fi, unplugging appliances, and going without air conditioning. Many in poor neighborhoods say they expect their streets to go dark earlier and for their social services to be affected first. The West's sanctions campaign against Russia continues to force the average household into paying a steep price.
It's very difficult to see this crisis getting better by 2023. Finding alternative sources for gas and petrol will cause higher prices. Renewable energy will be more expensive. France isn't a big coal producer. France is already depleting its petrol and gas stocks. So every choice away from Russian energy is going to increase energy prices.
In order to have more control over the national energy grid, this week the government announced that they will totally renationalize the company Electricity of France. The energy giant runs all of the nation's nuclear power plants. Nuclear power provides nearly 70% of France's energy, the most of any country in the world. But a recent series of outages have caused nuclear power output to drop to its lowest level in nearly 30 years. Leaders of French energy corporations recently said that energy cuts are certain for this winter, and that prolonged cold spells may threaten social and political cohesion.
The best solution is to negotiate with Russia to end the war in Ukraine. But we also need the leaders of the European Union to stop living in an isolated fishbowl where pushing for more war is a good idea. This energy and economic crisis is affecting all citizens.
A proposal to give the European Union the right to impose mandatory gas rationing across the bloc's 27 member countries was immediately shot down by the nations of Southern Europe this week. They called it the farthest-reaching power grab by Brussels this year. And it was especially controversial because individual national vetoes were not allowed under an emergency procedure employed by the leaders of the European Union. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Iraq's resistance force, the Popular Mobilization Unit, has staged a military parade to commemorate the 8th anniversary of its formation. The parade was held at a military base in Diyala province, northern Iraq. Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi, who is also the commander-in-chief of the Iraqi armed forces, was present. Also attending were PMU commanders, as well as a host of military and state officials. Units from the Defense and Interior Ministries, along with the country's anti-terrorism service, took part. The march, featured by a parade by infantry units, tanks, and other military vehicles. The chief of our political bureau in Baghdad, Navid Behrouz, joined us earlier explaining about the significance of the PMU parade and the message that it is sending.
From a military point of view, this parade is very important, and the PMU showed off its military might. Drones were displayed, as well as modern tanks, including T-72 and T-52, plus some other types of missiles and heavy weaponry and radar systems. Anti-intelligence radar systems. This shows that the PMU is increasing its military might day by day. More importantly, in addition to PMU units, forces from other Iraqi security sources, as well as other military organizations, were present. This shows that all armed forces of Iraq are united in defending the country. And more importantly, was the presence of Mustafa al-Kadhimi at the parade, which shows the importance of the PMU, and it is a response to all the accusations leveled against the PMU, because some say that PMU is acting outside the authority of official Iraqi organizations, but this shows that the PMU is working alongside other Iraqi armed forces and intelligence forces and security forces, and is protecting Iraq.
Iraq's political party, Asaib al-Ahl al-Haq, has called on parliament to take measures in response to a Wednesday deadly attack on a northern village that was blamed on Turkey. The group, which is also part of Iraq's popular mobilization forces, says the legislature should ask the UN Security Council to force Turkey to withdraw from Iraqi soil. It says Turkey should also be obliged to pay compensation for killing Iraqis. Asaib Ahl al-Haq said that it will go into action to counter Turkish aggression if legislators fail to take the necessary action. The group said relentless acts of aggression, the establishment of military bases in Iraq, and the violation of its sovereignty are far from the principles of good neighborliness. 9 people were killed in the shelling of a Kurdish village that the Iraqi government blames on Turkey. Ankara has denied any involvement, saying that the attack was committed by terrorist organizations. Political analyst Mohammed Obaid says Turkey uses security reasons as a pretext to fulfill its ambitions in the unstable countries like Iraq and Syria.
We have a similar situation which is being dealt in Syria also. Turkey using the pretext of security concerns in order to invade and create some regional borderlines, border areas, the same is being applied in Turkey. In a nutshell, it is the creation of this chaotic situation in countries, basically by the Americans, by their allies in the region, and then for Turkey to come and harvest the outcome of this in order to fulfill its ambitions in regional territories, and whether in Syria or in Iraq. So. Of course, there is an unnatural situation when it comes to the Kurdish issue, which needs to be dealt politically by the Turkey officials in this regard in the first place. Then there won't be such a problem in all these areas. So, once again, it is Turkey using and exploiting the unstable situations in its neighboring countries in order to fulfill its ambitions, which are clear to everybody, whether in Aleppo, whether in northern Iraq, in the oil areas in these countries. So it is not, it's only a pretext which is being used in order to serve these goals.
Moving on, scores of Palestinians, including several children, are injured as Israeli forces attack the town of Silwan in occupied Al-Quds. The forces fired live rounds, rubber-coated bullets, and tear gas at the Palestinians protesting against an overnight raid on the town. A local information center says several army jeeps and police vehicles entered the area, and soldiers began storming and searching homes. The Israeli forces also abducted Zohair Arajabi, the head of a committee monitoring the regime's violations in Silwan. His son Hamza was abducted too. Israel has intensified its raids on Palestinian towns and cities across the occupied West Bank in recent weeks. Dozens of Palestinians have lost their lives and many more detained as a result. Moving on. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kendall, says Israeli soldiers attacked Silwan to help settlers in their raid against Palestinian houses, which they claim to be theirs.
The main aim of the Israeli settlers' raid to Silwan neighborhood in East Al-Quds and mainly to the Batn al-Hawa neighborhood in Silwan, it's because Israeli settlers, settler groups, continue to claim that many of the Palestinian homes there were owned by Israeli settlers years ago, and that they own these homes, regardless to the fact that Palestinians have documents proving that they are the real owners, and if not, they are the real owners. Before 1948, dozens of Palestinians, Palestinian families had purchased them after 1948 from Palestinian other Palestinian families. Now, what happened this night is that groups of Israeli settlers raided Silwan and attacked Palestinians. Of course, Israeli police interfered to protect and make sure the settlers were safe, attacked the Palestinians, fired rubber-coated bullets, as well as heavy tear gas and stun grenades.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Iranian Radio. Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Aperture.
Being the second largest country in the Middle East, Iran is rich with a colorful bouquet of architectural masterpieces, magnificent mosques, ancient caravanserais, impressive rock tombs, and former royal cities of the ancient Persian Empire. But perhaps Iran's amazing desert landscape has been largely overlooked. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Iran's deserts are unique in the variety of their composition and surface types. A yardang, or kalut, as they're called in Farsi, is a topographical feature that has been carved out of a surface by the wind. They're most commonly found in deserts where there is a sand supply, which abrades the surface when moved by the wind, and soft sedimentary rocks that the sand easily erodes. Over time, the sand wears down the surface into beautiful streamlined shapes that are aligned with the prevailing sand-moving winds. Iran is famous for mega yardangs in Kerman in the south of the country. Stay with us for this episode of Iran Trotter as we follow Javad to discover the spectacular kaluts in Iran.
To most humans, nature means trees, jungles, rivers, and mountains. But is that all there is to this beautiful nature created by the architect of all beauties? God is limitless. He is infinite and has created nature with infinite beauties. Nature has many and varied complicated aspects, and the natural world in Iran is no exception. Many people do not consider deserts and wastelands as part of nature. But the fact is, deserts constitute a large part of the environment on our planet. All we have to do is open our eyes and look at these countless, peerless beauties. Hi. I'm Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm traveling to the most pristine areas of my beloved country and uncovering to you its many beauties. This time, I've come to a vast city in Kerman province, a city that in fact forms a major swath of the amazing landscape in Kerman. The fictitious city of Kaluts. I set out on a 110-kilometer walking journey to the northeast of Kerman province to arrive at my main destination. The Yardangs are located in an area spanning 11,000 square kilometers in the west of Iran's Lut Desert. The Yardangs of Lut cover an area around 150 kilometers long and around 70 kilometers wide. In the words of some researchers, this vast expanse used to be the bed of a lake sometime in the third geological period, and that in fact the Yardangs, or the kaluts, are made up of brittle sediments lying at the bottom of that lake. At some point in the third geological period, the lake dried up as a result of the major climatic changes that occurred on Earth. Torrential rains and their ensuing humidity in the following periods and water erosion led to the creation of the kaluts, or yardangs. Other researchers believe the Yardangs are the result of the alluvial deposits originating from Birjan Mountains in the distant past. Sharp temperature fluctuations in the Lut and the constant blowing of local winds carrying abrasive sediment loads of sandstones battering these Yardangs over the years have led to their erosion. Winds that continue to lash out at these Yardangs and eventually raise beautiful clay terraces to the ground. Trips to the heart of deserts and wastelands have always been risky, but studying up on such places and the risks involved in traveling to them, not to mention carrying a proper map, a GPS device, and the topographic map of the area you are traveling to, can bring the number of risks involved down to a great extent. In all fairness, one of the most beautiful areas in the Lut Desert is the Shahdad Yardangs of Kerman. I mean, there are few places in the world with such beautiful desert landscape. I think nowhere in the world can you find a landscape as vast as this one. I am in the Lut Yardangs, hoping for a good trip, and I'm positive it's gonna be a thrill. I stepped onto a part of the river that not many people were interested in traveling to for several reasons. The flight distance between the Yardangs and the Yalan Megadunes in the west of Lut is around 150 kilometers. For several consecutive years, part of the Yalan Megadunes was announced by NASA as one of the hottest spots on Earth. This is an area where temperatures run above 70 degrees in the summer. With no trace of life among them, the Yardangs of Lut look scary to human eyes. Although in recent years, some researchers have discovered and registered a number of plants and insect species in them. But at first look, the fictional town of Kaluts or Yardangs bears no trace of life of any kind. Encountering sandstorms in the desert or getting lost in them, or all the other hidden dangers of such terrains, can put your life at grave risk. But none of those reasons stop me from walking right into the Yardangs. You can enjoy spending time in this beautiful natural landscape with enough information on its climate and terrain, and by using a map and GPS device. No one has found any trace of human habitation in the Kaluts area, not in the past and not in the present eras. But on the outskirts of these beautiful Kaluts, there are many remnants of human habitation from years gone by. The Kaluts are located on the outskirts of Shahdad, a city in Kerman that is among the most ancient in Iran, a place with a more than 6,000-year-old culture and history. The world's oldest metal flag was discovered here. The many qanats and water reservoirs on the outskirts of the Kaluts, as well as the lush gardens of Shahdad, are evidence of human settlement in the distant past. Right at the beginning of the route, I came across an area with a concentration of strange Kalud formations, a place famous for its egg-shaped hills. I have to walk a long distance to get to the heart of the Shahdad Kalut. But the beautiful elevations you see behind me, which is sort of the prelude to the main Kaluts, are called the egg-shaped hills, and for good reason. They really do look like eggs, although these hills are considered as little Kaluts. The reason they've been abraded more than the other Kaluts in this region is rainfalls and, of course, the type of soil they are made from. And if it goes on like this, rainwater and wind are going to destroy them in the not-too-distant future. Every spot you go to in this region, you see new and different Kaluts or Yardangs. The majority of those who travel to the Kaluts are not aware of the diversity of the landscapes in this terrain and its natural phenomena. But the fact is, the Kaluts of Kerman are a peerless kaleidoscope of beautiful desert landscapes. Everywhere you look in this region, you see spectacular yet peculiar sights. Around 7 kilometers after the egg-shaped hills, I arrived at another strange yet interesting scenery. From a distance, I thought I was approaching some prehistoric cemetery. But well, this is not a cemetery. These mounds you see here are called the Dolphin Hills. In fact, they are very small Kaluts in the vicinity of the big ones. The dual action of wind abrasion and rainwater has chiseled them to look like dolphins swimming on a wave of dust and sand. Every part of the Kaluts in Shahdad has its own unique shape. And these Dolphin Hills are among those unique parts of the Shahdad Kaluts. These are really extraordinary, really beautiful. I've been walking around in the Shahdad Kaluts for hours now, deep into the heart of these remarkable protuberances. Although it is fall now, and the best season to travel to the Lut Desert, and of course to the Shahdad Kaluts, early spring is also a good time. Anyway, it's noontime and very hot. It was very cold in the morning, but now the temperature keeps going up, so I'm going to have to take a layer off. The temperature in the desert fluctuates sharply between the morning and the evening. It's always like that. So you have to remember to pack the right clothes for summer and winter weather. That's what it's like in the desert. You get summer and winter weather at the same time, happening within hours of each other on a single day. You should keep that in mind. It's really getting hot here. I just hope it'll stop right there as we approach noontime. Because, I mean, the sun, the heat from the sun can just be unbearable. Although I've already thought of something for a situation like this, one of the most important things we have to carry with us when traveling through deserts and wastelands are glasses, sunglasses that is. They're very important to protecting your eyes against the scorching sun. When the rays of the sun reach the dirt, they are reflected in your direction and bother your eyes. The air here is very clean. That's why there's so much light. So you have to wear sunglasses if you ever come to a place like this. If you don't, your vision is going to get hurt and you're going to get wrinkles around your eyes. And that's what the ladies are very sensitive about. Thank you. dazzling beauties of the Kaluz redoubled my enthusiasm for traveling into the heart of these sand formations. But the deeper I walked into them, the more arduous things became. Walking on the sand in the punishing heat requires strenuous effort and drains your energy. The day started out cold, but the temperatures kept going up as I approached midday. The biting autumn cold was nowhere to be felt. Walking on the sand and grit really wears you out after a while, and it makes you sweat a lot too. It's starting to get really hot. I'd better change into something more suitable. I'm wearing a thin layer, but the short sleeves expose my forearms to the sun, and that means sunburn. The sun is just bearing down on me. I feel like it's burning my face. I mean, I really had to change my clothes to avoid getting sunburn on my arms. The sun can get really annoying round about noontime out in the desert, even if it's not very hot. You're bound to get sunburned. So you must wear long-sleeve shirts with good breathability at the same time. I mean, that's what I always do. And I've never run into any problems because long sleeves have always protected my arms against the sun. Now, more important than wearing long-sleeve shirts out in the desert is to have proper headgear, such as this hat. What this hat does is it prevents the radiation from the sun from reaching your head to a great extent, and as a result, your face, neck, and ears won't get burnt. It really feels good when you wear one of these. And of course, a good pair of sunglasses is a must-have in a place like this. But there is another type of glasses, sunglasses, that I carry with me all the time. These are called storm goggles by some and skiing goggles by others. It's important to pack a pair of these goggles too, because when there is a sandstorm, when strong winds start blowing, they kick up a lot of sand and other particles into the air, and the goggles prevent them from going into your eyes. More important than that, you can see where you're going when you're out in the sticks without worrying about sand getting into your eyes. Man, I'm beat. It really wears you out when you walk on sand and up and down on those little hills. It's just fatiguing. I dare say, walking about in the Kaluz area and the hot areas of Lut Desert in the summer is next to impossible. The temperatures are so high and the surface of the earth so hot, you won't last more than a few kilometers. That's a time when you cannot see any living creatures in the Lut Desert. You can only see them during the night. It's very important to carry enough water when you travel to a place like this. If you're going to spend 2, 3, or 4 days trekking in the desert, make sure you have enough water. That's because you sweat a lot and your body loses a lot of water. And obviously, when that happens, you become dehydrated. In addition to that, you have to eat food that contains salt. But if your food doesn't contain enough salt, you need to eat salty nuts. That's because your body loses a lot of sodium as you sweat in the heat, and that's going to harm your body. Okay, now let's eat an orange. The Kaluz expand intermittently from the west of the Lut Desert towards the southeast. The corridors formed among them look in the same direction as the Kaluz themselves, that is, in the direction of the local winds. They are all very brittle. The shape of each Kaluz depends on how it was first formed, its density, and the direction of the winds that brush against it on their paths. Shifting winds and other erosive factors in the Kaluz basin has created a variety of them with different shapes and sizes. In some places, winds have filled the depression around the Kaluz with sand, and in other places, they have blown away the sand from around them. Now, let's take a look at the etymology of the word Kalut. Kalut is a blend of two words, Kal and Lut. Together, they mean the city of Lut. In the Khorasan region, in central Iran and along the coast of the Caspian Sea, the word Kal has taken on different meanings. In Khorasan and Sistan and Baluchistan, it's the root of words such as Kalate and Kalat, meaning castle or citadel. It could also mean a hamlet or a village perched on an elevation. In the center of Iran, the word Kalat means a walled-off village. The Kaluts are an imaginary city. From a distance, they look like the remains of a ruined city. Of course, there are a few other areas like this in some parts of the world, but the Kaluts of Iran cover the largest such area in the world. Without human interference and technology, Mother Nature has put on display her unique artistic talent and creativity. It was starting to get dark when, on a nature trip, it's important that the nature traveler find the right spot where they can pitch their tent before the dark sets in. That will ensure a good night's rest without any trouble. I'm going to call it a day now, and I think the best place for me to camp out is right here next to a lone Kalut surrounded by sand. The wind has created this hole here as if to prepare it for someone to set up their tent in. This is perfect because here I'll have my back to the wind, which usually blows from the heights of Sirge Mountains back there towards the Kaluts. I mean, that's why this hole has been created. This Kalut hasn't allowed sand to accumulate here, hence the evenly shaped depression around it. It's just a perfect place to camp out. We're spending the night here. It's a great spot, and hopefully we're going to have a star-studded sky above us. Okay, I've been told I wouldn't be able to find any firewood or shrubs or any living creatures because deep in the heart of the Kaluts, the winds are so strong they won't allow any vegetation to grow on their path. In other words, if a plant grows here, it gets blown away by the wind. But there is an exception to that rule, and that is an area located on the path of floodwaters flowing down to the Kaluts area from the Ravar Mountains. The floods uproot the shrubs on the banks of the rivers nearby, the ones near the Kaluts, that is, and dump them in the seasonal river that's created near here and eventually brings them over to the Kaluts area. I might be able to find something there to make a fire here tonight to keep me and others warm. The temperatures in the Lut Desert fluctuate constantly, making life a bit difficult for nature travelers. Therefore, I always pack warm clothes and a good warm sleeping bag. Another beauty of the desert is its star-studded night sky. In the absence of light pollution, you get a clear view of the twinkling stars and part of the Milky Way. You can spend hours feasting your eyes on those beautiful celestial bodies that adorn the expansive firmament above. I'm glad I found these sticks. It gets really cold out here at night. I rarely make fire during my trips because I set a lot of store by nature and even dry sticks of wood. These sticks are a form of energy. They are no different than oil and gas, so we shouldn't use them recklessly. As I say, I don't make fire when I camp out unless I really have to. Most of the time, I don't need to. And when I do, I make a small one. But in the Lut Desert and in the Shahdad Desert, temperatures fluctuate a lot. I remember coming here 3 years ago. One night, winter was about to come to an end. I mean, like 2 or 3 days to the end of the season, 3 years ago. That night, right here in the Lut Desert, the temperature plunged to -1 degrees. Here's the thing. In the day, at midday I mean, I had traveled deeper into this area and experienced temperatures as high as 43 degrees. That's a huge difference in one single day. It was all very strange to me. But well, that's what deserts are like. It's typical of them. It can get really cold during the night, especially during fall and winter. Therefore, you have to have proper clothes to wear, and if you manage to find a few sticks, you can keep yourself warm and enjoy yourself sitting around a campfire.
Thank you. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. I would like to talk in this episode about patience and perfection. What is the relationship between patience and perfection? So obviously, first of all, we need to touch on the meaning of patience. And of course, what does patience mean? On the basis of prophetic traditions, patience is defined as the resistance shown by an individual on the road towards perfection against mischief, against corruption, and against degradation. Now, it's a kind of resistance. And resistance against mischief, against corruption, will lead to perfection. On the road towards perfection, one has to be resistant against mischief, against anything which degrades the individual. We can compare the example of patience with a mountain climber, or you can say mountaineer, who in order to reach the peak has to face internal as well as external obstacles and barriers. You know, if you want to reach the pinnacle or the summit of the mountain, you will need internal as well as external problems and barriers and obstacles. Now, the internal obstacles are within the individual himself, within the inner self, you know, and the external obstacles are outside, and they are beyond your control. Now, each of these obstacles, you know, have something to do with the climbing efforts that you make. They interfere with the efforts that to climb the mountain. Internal obstacles such as, for example, love for comfort, love for ease, and as well as fear, for example, despair, and different types of similar passions try to stop you and prevent you from, you know, climbing further or making any efforts, because every effort is difficult to make. And also the feeling of indecisiveness in many forms, in one form or the other, you know, kills the determination for climbing. You have the determination to climb, but you know, sometimes a lack of decisiveness on your part somehow make your determination and your willpower weak and may cause you to stop making further efforts. So this is, you know, if you're trying to achieve perfection, you need to make efforts. So this is the internal obstacles. We have also, on the other hand, external barriers, external impediments and obstacles. They can be stones, rocks, wolves, thieves, and, you know, thorns, and so on and so forth. Because if you want to climb the peak of the mountain, then you have to understand that there are such natural barriers in front of you. You might end up falling down from the cliff. So the cliff is there, that is the external. And there are could be snakes, wolves, and things like that, and could be thieves. So these are hindrances. And whether you are going to challenge to face these challenges or not, it is up to you. If you want to achieve perfection, you have to go through these obstacles. You have to overtake, you have to somehow face these challenges and be brave enough to be patient. Those who are faced with these kinds of barriers will have the option. There is no doubt they will have the option to either drop his journey on the road, which is full of dangers, which is full of hardships, or to go ahead by, let's say, by offering resistance, by showing resistance against these obstacles in overcoming each obstacle, each barrier, obviously with his willpower, with the power of determination.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
If a person shows resistance and, tries to overcome each barrier with his willpower, this is called and this is defined as patience. Patience is nothing other than this. And of course, as I said in one of the previous episodes, patience has different meanings in proportion to different situations and proportion to different conditions. So it has its meaning and it finds its meaning in those contexts. Now, brothers and sisters, during this limited span of life in this world, the human being between his birth and death is a traveler on the road towards the final destination. The scholars of ethics and the jurists and different Muslim scholars have time and again said that every individual has, and every human being has, a goal and has a final destination. He must move and go on and continue the path towards the final destination. Of course, there is a goal. Every individual has a goal, and he must understand what his goal is in order for him to live a better life and to live a happy life, a prosperous life. He must know what his goals are in this world. And of course, God has given every individual the capacity to endeavor, to make efforts as much as possible in order for him to bring himself close to the final destination, to achieve those goals and achieve perfection. Perfection is obviously the ultimate goal that man has to achieve, perfection. And of course, the more perfect you are, the closer you are to Allah. So closeness to Allah, proximity to Allah, and perfection to Allah happen to be at the same time, and they are achieved at the same time. You cannot be close to Allah without achieving perfection. The main goal of life is to achieve perfection. All the duties and responsibilities which have been assigned to man's shoulders are the necessary means and ways to bring man closer to that goal, closer to that target. And the primary aim of the divine religions, brothers and sisters, let's understand this fact, that the basic aim of the divine religions and the great prophet was to build an Islamic society providing a suitable field in which human beings could travel, ultimately reaching their desired goal, their desired destination, and that is achieving perfection. That's all for this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.